I'm gonna forego with all the formalities I usually do at the beginning of the show. We're gonna wait a little bit on that. We were having an interesting discussion, actually kind of a fun discussion, pre-show here, and I kind of wanted to continue down this line a little bit. And it kind of ties into, you know, where we left off last week. And, you know, shame on me. I usually push the record button in our post-show discussion that we have, because even at that point, you know, we have some pretty interesting discussions on various things. But we were just commenting. Chris had just made the statement that he's going to go an all-grain beer, bro. And I reminded him that, now, this is a guy who doesn't drink much beer. And we've been told that before, right, guys, from Chris?
Yeah.
And so now he's just informed us that he's going to give an all-grain go a try for a 5-gallon batch. And I said, yeah, it's not going to be long. You're going to be like me, and you're going to have 15 or 20 cases of beer laying around the house. So what prompted you to go with the all-grain, Chris?
Just curiosity. I just want to see if I can do it, because, you know, when I first read about it, it seemed like it was something that was so complicated, and then when I really dug into it deeper, I found out that it's not, I mean, it's really only as complicated as you make it, mostly how much you're limited in equipment. So,
yeah,
I thought, yeah, why not? I'll give it a try. And something that Jeff had said a few weeks ago, I had mentioned that I thought an Oktoberfest would make a good braggot. And Jeff mentioned that he and his wife, or maybe it was his wife, that really enjoyed Bock's, which are, you know, they're also a lager. But when I started reading about the Bock's after he mentioned that, I really got interested in the decoction mashing and how there's just something about the idea of the caramelized sugars and some residual sweetness and a good rich, you know, because, you know, I like things with a lot of body and,
right,
and some sweetness and things like that. So I've got all the equipment to do that, propane burners and turkey fryers and fish cookers. And
wow, you're
everything.
All set up. Oh, yeah.
You know, well, yeah, it was just equipment that I already had. So really the only thing I've got to do is make a mash tun and do that out of a Coleman cooler. And so I'm just going to give it a try. You know, I may fall flat on my face. Who knows? But I've just, out of curiosity, I've just got to give it a try and see what happens.
Well, that's, you know, I mean, I also said that, you know, I'm drinking my wife's coffee chocolate thing, stout porter, I don't know, whatever the hell it is. It's a stout. It's listed as Peace Coffee Stout, I believe, at Northern Brewer. And, you know, thanks to them, you know, I made the remark, this was one of the freebies they threw in when I had ordered those two bourbon barrel deals for my braggot. So I went ahead and cooked it up, and I'll be damned if it didn't come out tasting really good. And my wife just absolutely loves it. I mean, she loves the chocolate, the coffee combination. She loves dark beer. She's really into the stouts and porters. So I'm actually quite proud of myself. This is the second only beer that I've brewed. The first one, of course, was that pumpkin thing that I did, and I thought that came out very well too. So, you know, and I get, you know, I was a little fearful. I mean, beer is what I really wanted to do in the beginning until I found out about this mead. And I didn't know much about brewing beer. It looked like it was complicated as hell. I spent some time on YouTube and, you know, Chris, I mean, you're talking mash tuns and burners and all this stuff. And I'm thinking, holy crap, you know. And then you see these guys with garages full of stainless steel, you know, these great pieces of artwork, Jeff, that looks like you know, I mean, it looked like, you know, they invested, you know, their retirement into these brewing systems, you know. And it's really not that complicated, is it?
Well, no, I mean, I didn't go all out when I started making mead, and I eventually got to the point where I'm making really good mead with minimal equipment, because I just don't want to load up my house or garage or shop or anything else with tons of brewing equipment that can be done so simply. And sometimes when you do things more with less equipment in a more simple way, it may require a little more effort on your part, but you know, if you're going to dedicate a half a day or a day to brewing, then what's an extra hour or two's work, you know? Because you're pretty much spending the whole day doing it anyway. So I'm not saying that equipment wouldn't make it easier and faster, but hey, that's part of the fun of it. I'm just going to keep it simple and see what happens.
Sure. Well, I think a lot of the joy of brewing is just enjoying the process too. You know, you get to, you focus on something you enjoy and you get to spend some time doing it. On the topic of keeping things simple, I don't know if you've looked into it, but the whole brew in the bag approach is getting a lot of, interest for me just because, it basically eliminates the need for a mash tun entirely. You can take a decoction approach kind of after a fashion. It's not a true decoction by any stretch of the imagination, but using just the kettle from your turkey fryer and a bag like an oversized paint strainer bag. You can reheat and allow for the different stages of decoction and, heating that mash water rather than adding more in each stage. So you get a pretty close approximation that way, actually. So, and it is equipment light, to be sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you take two propane burners like you would use in a turkey fryer or a fish cooker, and one propane tank and a couple of pots and a Coleman cooler, I mean, really, you could live in an apartment. You could live in a small apartment and stash that in a closet. You know, it really doesn't take up that much room.
Yeah. I actually know someone who did just that for probably about a year and a half.
Yeah. Take it out in the back and set it up and spend a few hours brewing and then clean it all up and stash it back in a closet and, or heck, you could even stash it over in the corner behind a chair or something.
Well, one of the things that I've been looking at and toying around with the idea of going all grain is, and there's actually several systems out there, but one in particular that I've done the most research on is called the Grain Father. And it's a one pot. You don't need the mash tons. It gets rid of all of that. It does everything. And it's one system, small, compact, electric, digital controls. So it eliminates the need for all the extraneous, mash tons and coolers and all this other stuff. So I've been kind of looking at that. But
you know,
I'm
I was going to buy all four of you guys a Grain Father for Christmas, but then I started thinking about it, and I thought, you know, y'all would feel obliged if I did that, like you owed me something, so I decided not to do it. So I know y'all are happy that I didn't, because you would have felt obligated.
Yeah.
how thoughtful.
Yeah.
Hey,
gift to you is not getting you a grandfather for Christmas.
My wife appreciates that.
See how I turned that around?
Hey, welcome to the Mead House. We just got started, guys. We were pretty neck deep in this discussion before we push the button and turn the mics on. So I thought we would kind of round that off a little bit as we got started here tonight. But again, welcome to the Mead House. I know somebody around here has got the calendar. I think we got 3-4 more shows to go. We're going to go on Christmas break. I think it's 2 weeks, Christmas, New Year, something like that. We'll get into that a little bit later on, but and remind everybody where we're at through the holidays. But, you know, if you're just tuning in for the first time, welcome to the show. If you're listening to us on the podcast, we're glad you are. You can get the podcast at different places. You can get it from iTunes, Stitcher, Podcastpedia. You can also get it at the number one place, themeadhouse.com. We've got them all piled up. If you look on the left side of the website in that little column there, the latest one is always up on top of that that pile underneath. So we're glad you're here. We've got a Facebook. It's called The Mead House. Just simply type in The Mead House in your Facebook search thing. It'll take you right to it. And that's really picking up, getting quite a few likes and people passing through. And again, our website, The Mead House, that's where we live. So if you want to call the show, 818-921-4680. Love to hear from you at any time. Ryan Richardson in the house. Aaron Martin along for the ride. Mississippi Chris Spencer, he's the one that was going to get us all one of those grandfathers. Jeff Schaus is in the house. And Jeff, the Facebook deal, have we got anybody we can talk about?
Sure, I've got a couple shout-outs for us. You know, first off, there's Scott Monroe, one of our long-term listeners. I think he's been here since the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
He mentioned the other day that he's doing our blueberry sizer. Looks like it's going pretty well so far. So, Scott, let us know how that turns out. We're anxious to hear what you come up with it. Also saw a post from J. Renee on mead. I had a few different meads that she bottled up, one of them was a cherry pie. One of them she called her O. Henry mead. It was figs, peaches, and rose. And then a third one she had was what she called the Woodsman, which was with maple syrup and hickory syrup using, and I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, but probably Yapon holly honey. And it was sweetened with molasses. Some really interesting flavor combinations going on there, I thought. So I thought I'd give her a shout out and say, appreciate the interesting work you're doing. Yeah. And then I had a quick question from Rocky Hall on the Mead Maker site, too. Was wondering about using acorns as a tannin source. What do you guys think?
Gosh, I don't see why not. Get kind of a nutty, might add kind of a nutty component to it, maybe.
Mm-hmm. What's he using it in?
It sounds like he's going to try to use it the same way you would use oak as an aging and a tannin source. With a standard mead. I know there was a lot of discussion on the page, and some people had, tried this in various. Meads, beers, things like that, and there was a general consensus that you have to let them soak in some water to get some of that that woody flavor out, but it's possible to use. I just didn't know if you guys.
I don't know. I've been into an acorn before just to see what it was like, and they're pretty bitter. They're really they're very tannic also, so I don't know. I heard something similar from someone who was going to use a walnut hull, the green part, and they were doing it not only for the tannin but also for color. And I think that turned out to be a disaster when they reported back on it. So I don't know how the acorns would go.
Maybe taking those acorns and roasting them, hauling. I mean, I hope he's hauling them out and taking the actual acorn out of the pod.
Right.
Maybe toasting them off somehow, or, let them sit out and dry and then toast them off somehow. That might help.
That could be interesting.
Well, on the subject of using nuts, so I know this is an entirely different use for them, but Jeff, I think it was you that said that you had tasted the Lazy Magnolia pecan.
Yeah.
Brown ale. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found out that they get that pecan flavor in by using the pecans actually in the mash. You have to toast them and, you know, put them in a put them in a paper bag or between some paper towels or something to get some of the oil off. And then you crush them up and you actually use them in the mash. But what you have to do is you have to add in some extra torrefied wheat or carafoam or something to make up for the loss of the head that you're going to get because of the oils. So if you're talking about brewing a beer, I know people use nuts in the mash. I don't know how you would go about if it's a mead with the acorns. I don't know, but hey, if it's a 5-gallon batch, you know, pull off a couple of gallons and use the acorns on it and save the other 3 gallons in case you screw it up so you still got some left.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Experimental approach always works, right?
You know, I'd be interested in, maybe we can contact, what was the guy's name again?
It was Rocky Hall.
Let's see if we can contact him and, see if we can't get him to come on the show. If he gives it a try, I'd like to follow that and just see what kind of luck he has with it. Maybe, you know, maybe we're, you know, this could be an experiment in the making here, like Chris is talking, you know, just a short batch, you know, 1 gallon, 2 gallon deal that that he can play around with and let us know, you know, what the results are. So let's see if we can contact him. Jeff,
I will say on a side note, if you are looking for an easy way to get some tannins in a 5-gallon batch, 4 black tea bags steeped in some water is a great way to do it. Get a couple of cups of water and steep 4 black tea bags for about 10 or 15 minutes and add that in, and it's a good way to get some mild tannins.
Not the flavored ones.
No, just plain black tea, like Irish breakfast tea or something.
Yeah. Tawnings, yeah. Irish breakfast tea. I think that's the one, Chris, that you had me pick up.
Twinings.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. I think Bigelow also makes a good one. Doesn't have to be anything fancy, just a plain black tea.
Yeah. Well, good deal, and thanks, Jeff, for the Facebook update, and we'll do this every week. I know folks out there, they'd like to hear their names mentioned on the show, and sometimes, once in a while, I will get an email from one of them, and it's a great way to stay up with contact. What are we drinking tonight, guys? Let's start off with Aaron. What's in your glass tonight?
Yeah, so tonight I am cracking open a bottle of Blueberry Melomel from a meadery I discovered down in Chicago. My in-laws live down there in Naperville, Illinois. This is from Wild Blossom Meadery and Winery, and it's called Blueberry Nectar, 11% alcohol by volume. Definitely a little on the sweeter side.
So you're going to be toast by the end of the show.
Exactly. Oh,
go ahead.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's definitely on the sweeter side. Really, really pronounced honey aroma and flavor. I'm a fan of this. This is good. It's a little dangerous though. You're right, JD. If I gotta moderate myself here on a work night.
There you go. Jeff has always got something interesting in his cup. Jeff, what is it tonight?
Well, believe it or not, guys, tonight I am drinking some of that coffee mead.
Really?
Yeah, ooh. Yeah. You know, and this is one of those that I had to kind of distance myself from because at first, you know, you guys know that I was really, I wasn't impressed with how the experiment turned out. It wasn't the coffee mead that I saw in my head that I wanted to see in my head. But so. I had my buddy Chris over, was going through some of the stuff I had in progress. We cracked open a bottle of this coffee mead. You know, I have to admit, once I got past the fact that it wasn't what I was looking for its own merits, it's actually a pretty decent brew. It is a little bit on the sweeter side than what I wanted. It does not have that dark coffee bitter flavor. But the way that the coffee plays with the mead is actually, it's kind of interesting. It's really reminiscent of the one we got from Sergio in that. But you know, I don't hate it. Now that I've had some time to go, oh, okay, well, it didn't turn out how I wanted it, but that's fine. I can enjoy this.
Wow, interesting. Sounds good. I haven't tossed, and you know, I know you guys read my email. I haven't tossed everything out. I still have a couple of gallons of coffee that I thought, you know what, let's just put this on the back burner. And, in fact, it's not only on the back burner, it's like on the bottom shelf in a cabinet tucked away way in the back. So, and I just found them today. And I was like, oh yeah, what is this stuff? I'm still hoping that, you know, maybe some time might cure them. But, Chris, you know, last couple of shows, it's been something other than coffee. What is it tonight?
I've got a truck stop honey brown ale. This is from Back 40 Beer Company over in Gadsden, Alabama. It's a medium-bodied English brown ale using Alabama wildflower honey and a subtle hop profile. And it's really malty. It's got a lot of caramel in the nose. I don't really get much of a nut aroma or nut flavor. Really, there's if you've had the Lazy Magnolia that I was talking about earlier, the pecan brown ale, this is almost exactly the same thing without the pecans. It's a pretty good example of a brown ale. It's one of those kind of it's like a craft beer that you can drink a lot of, or it's the kind of craft beer that you would want to use to introduce beer drinkers into craft beer, people who are not used to things other than the big macro breweries. It's pretty good drinking beer.
Sounds good.
Yeah, it does. Good deal. Ryan, I hear it sounds like he's banging around in his refrigerator looking for something to drink. Ryan, did you find something?
That wasn't me, whatever that noise was.
I heard a bunch of bottles.
I was reading the bottle, and I clanked it on my glass.
Oh. Ryan, what's in your glass tonight, bud?
I am drinking Worker by Oregon Mead and Cider Company. It's a raspberry sparkling mead, courtesy of good buddy Nate Parr out in Portland. This one is described as a lovely balance of fruit flavor without any sweetness or pretentious naming convention. It's a 6.25% ABV. Sparkling, you know, carbonated. Really surprised how delicate the flavor is. There's no sweetness at all. Very little, just a little bit of tartness. I like it. I think it's good. I think that maybe just a little bit more raspberry flavor would have been just, you know, in a picture, a nice juicy raspberry. I think I wanted just a little bit more when I read the bottle, but no, very overall very good, and would definitely have another one.
Yeah, sounds good. Well, OJD's drinking a homegrown brew here tonight. This is it's a coffee porter from Northern Brewer. It was, like I mentioned, a while ago, it was one that was tossed in a freebie when I ordered the two Braggot kits, the bourbon barrel kits. And this, I kind of altered the recipe a little bit. I had read some of the reviews, and it's really, I mean, if you ever go there, or if you're ever looking for a kit, check the reviews and check and see what people are talking about. Sometimes you can pick up some pretty good ideas. A couple that I had found was that one review said, you know what, don't put the coffee in at the end of the boil like the instructions say. Wait and put it in a carboy. And I thought, okay, I can do that. And I changed up the beans. I used a dark roast, dark Italian roast, whole bean. I didn't crush them, didn't do anything to them. Just, sanitized them, rinsed them with some spring water, tossed them into the carboy. And I toasted some of those cocoa nibs that I had, about 8 ounces, and dumped those in with the beans. And I just let this porter sit on that for a couple of weeks. Threw it in a keg, and lo and behold, man, this stuff turned out really good. I'm quite proud. This is the second beer ever that I've done, and my wife absolutely loves it. So I only poured myself a half a glass, because if I get caught drinking it all, she's going to be pissed. So we'll leave it at that. But if you're interested, it's that Peace Coffee Stout over at Northern Brewer. Pick it up and check it out. And that's the only thing different that I did to it. Oh, I did add 1 pound of lactose to it to help with a little bit of sweetness. And it's just perfect. Everything is just perfect. Got a nice chocolate flavor. In the end, the coffee comes through, very nice and very smooth.
Should we tell about my little fiasco with the Northern Brewer?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Chris and I had a discussion the other day. We often jump on the phone and one of these days, I guess they're just going to start funneling stock, Verizon stock, into our account. But a couple of hours that we spent on the phone with each other the other day, and Chris had a let's just let Chris explain it. I mean, this is like the catastrophe of, we all have them once in a while, but this is Chris's. So, Chris.
Yeah, well, this was one of those totally unexpected things. I had gotten the Northern Brewer chocolate milk stout kit, and I bought two of them. So I put one in and followed the instructions to the letter, got it in secondary. It was ready to keg. So I got out the keg, which I hardly ever use for anything. Haven't used it in a long time. And I had gotten this really cool gift from this guy that I know real well, and I wanted to use it. It was a new Blickman beer gun. So I thought, well, this will be the perfect time to use this. I'll keg this thing up, and then I'll use my new beer gun to put it in some bottles and send out to all you guys. So I hook everything up. I get the regulator on, and I'm going to test it. I rack the beer into the keg, and I turn around to test the regulator. And when I turn on the top valve on the CO2 tank, the entire face of the regulator just blew off. The face, the needle, all the inner workings, everything just came out on the floor. And my CO2 is quickly going down. And by the time I realized what had happened, by the time it registered with me, it was just sort of one of those moments where you drop your hands and go, well, shit. because there goes all the CO2. It's gone. And it's on a Sunday, so I can't get anything refilled. And I turn around and I notice this brown liquid on the floor. And somewhere during all this fiasco, my keg has sprung a leak at the weld at the bottom.
Oh, no.
So I go into a mad rush, panic, sanitizing, siphoning hose and start trying to rack this thing into a carboy. And I get it. I only ended up losing about a pint or so. It was a slow leak. And so you can imagine me with my accent in a hurry and pissed off. I sounded like Boomhauer. I finally got the thing racked over into a carboy, and I just kind of, I just stood back and looked at it for a moment, and you just kind of want to go over into the corner and fall through your own ass and just disappear. My little fiasco.
He was fit to be tied on the phone, I'm telling you.
Man, I tell you what, man, that daggum kid, man, it just come off there, man, and it's blowing.
Boomhauer.
Score one for Chris and one for Ryan. So Ryan had that catastrophe with the glass carboy, right? Wasn't that Ryan?
Yeah. Oh, washed the floor three times because every time I walked on it was still sticky.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we're keeping score, right, God. So Chris won, Ryan won. I haven't had one yet.
I think it's Chris 0, Ryan 0, Carboy 1, Blickman 1.
Yeah, you can put bucket 1, Jeff 0 in there too. I had that fiasco this summer with the the multiberry recipe at Chris's that I tried putting together, and
that's right.
Yeah, no, that's I right. It, like halfway or quarter after midnight, that wound up happening, and I ended up spending the next hour moving the washer and the dryer so I could mop up underneath and all that nasty, half fermented fruit up under it.
Yeah,
no, I didn't hear about that. I missed that one.
Oh, that was, when was that? May or June, I think.
Was that my multiberry hydromel?
Yeah, the lighter APV one.
I didn't know you tried to do that.
Yeah, we tried it, and it ended up on the floor of my back room instead of in a bottle or something, so didn't get very far with it.
Oh, that's a shame. That's a good brew.
I intend to put another one together at some point. I just haven't had the heart to try it again after that mess.
What happened? Did your airlock get clogged up or something? Or
I was trying to move the bucket, and it slipped over the edge of the fridge that I was keeping it in for temperature control. I didn't have it completely finished. It just had it on the floor of the fridge. I guess with the fluid in there, it was enough to shake it and push it over the edge. And I kind of saw it tipping and went, oh no, there's no way I'm saving this. It hit. And then the grommet seal, busted and it spilled all over the place.
You know, I'll say this, whenever you spill a bucket of brew like that for about 3 or 4 hours, it makes your house smell really good. But then the next day it smells like somebody had a drunk and vomited everywhere.
Yeah. We're kind of continuing. Last week we this is every week we shut the show down. At the end there, and then we usually sit around a table and hang out and talk about various things. And usually I hit the record button and I record these post show discussions, and I'm just piling them up, and hopefully I'm going to be able to get to them and just cut out some pieces and string them together and just make a whole show out of it. And those are the kinds of things we might play on a Tuesday night when we're off. But last week I didn't, man, we were having such a terrific discussion too, and I neglected to hit the record button, but we're kind of continuing that discussion. And I think one of the things that we had mentioned, guys, that, you know, we're 30, this is show number 31. I couldn't believe it until last week when I was, putting a show up, online. And, you know, and I'm typing in episode number 30 and I'm looking back and I'm thinking, God damn, we've done 30 of these shows. It's been a lot of fun. You know, and I think we've, each one of us has gotten something out of it. I certainly am not a professional brewer and I've learned quite a bit from Jeff, from Brian, from Chris, you know, from Aaron. Aaron is responsible for heading me in a new direction. I'll get to that here in a little while, but, let's just go around the table. What have you guys been able to get out of this show? Anybody?
Well,
somebody.
I think probably the biggest thing is just being introduced to different styles that I was completely closed-minded to. If you had asked me a year ago, would I ever consider brewing a braggot? I would have said, no way. Doesn't interest me. Don't care about it. If you had asked me a year ago, would I be interested in brewing a light session carbonated mead? I would have said, nope, don't care about it. So not that it's replaced my mainstays, but I've been introduced to a lot of new styles that, and not only introduced to them, but willing to try them. I think that's the biggest thing I've gotten.
Yeah. Jeff?
Oh, let's see. I think the biggest one for me is really, like, I don't want to call it a sounding board. I don't, maybe, but other people that are as interested in mead as I am and are willing to kind of go out there and try new things and, being able to talk to you guys on a really regular basis is kind of like, you know, it gives me somebody to throw my ideas off of. It lets me kind of, you know, I hear what you guys are working on and kind of that adds to, the stuff that I want to try out. It's really the kind of back and forth in the group has been really fantastic and kind of just helped me grow a lot as far as like what I'm interested in, what I'm kind of my expertise. I do feel like just my technique and my what I want to say, the nutrient regimen and the whole process has been solidified and is just getting really solid now too from practicing all the time and trying so many different approaches. I mean, also just the random stuff that we've been trying for fun, like the coffee experiment has just been a blast. I probably would have put coffee in something eventually, but it hadn't been occurred to me and it was probably low on my list of stuff to try, but you know, it's great fun to try stuff with other people that are interested in the same things you are.
Yeah. What do you think, Aaron? You know, you're the one that, and we're going to talk about it here in a little bit, because I want to get back to Ricky the Mead Maker and the show we had last week. But you've taken me down a new path, a new road. You know, for your own, you know, what have you gotten out of it for yourself?
You know, it's hard to just narrow it down to one thing. I think my response will be kind of along the same path as what Chris and Jeff have said too. You know, I think what I really get out of this, just these discussions that we have, is new ideas for new types of recipes, whether or not that's a new idea for a new type of ingredient to add or a new method for how to add ingredients. You know, hearing Chris's stories about his melomels that start off at, you know, 1160 and just things like that, that just, I wouldn't have ever guessed doing that. You know, I think the coffee boche that Jeff and I put together is another really good example of that, of, you know, something that maybe on my own, I wouldn't have thought to use those ingredients or incorporate those ingredients together in that way. So I think what I'm saying is, It's just when you have multiple minds coming together and thinking like this, I feel like it leads to a lot of creativity and new ideas and new concepts for kind of pushing the boundary and trying new things. Before, you know, coming on the show, if you look at the majority of the meads I had been making were more, you know, traditionals and, you know, some melomels and braggots and things like that. But just some of the stuff I've been getting into lately, I think it's pushing the envelope. It's going down new creative paths. And I think a lot of that is just in part to the discussion and ideas that we all have together.
Yeah.
And Ryan, you know, when you do things as a group, it makes failure easier somehow.
Yeah, it does. Because you're able to talk about it.
Accept. But yeah, but what's really interesting is that we all try something like the coffee, and we all pretty much failed if you look at what we were trying to achieve. But what's interesting is we all failed in different ways.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to be learned. There's as much to be learned from failure as there is success.
Yeah. And I was going to say, Ryan, he's kind of the illegitimate child that comes along after the fact, but Ryan, that just, he's like the younger brother that suddenly appears in the family. He's like, where did you come from? Ryan came along late in our show. And I'll tell you, he has been one of the most amazing people to have sitting around the table here. I have learned quite a bit from him as well. I like his perspective on things. Ryan, you know, you haven't been here as long as the rest of these guys sitting around a table, but, you know, what's this show all about for you?
Well, what I get out of this show is I get 2 uninterrupted hours a week to sit and drink in peace.
There
you go. I love it.
Yeah.
Best answer ever.
Hell, we might even adopt you now.
Welcome to the family.
Yeah. Ryan is such a kid.
I wonder how many of our listeners feel the same way.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do get once in a while I'll get some comments about the show, and I'll see a few things on Facebook. I think we're getting we've got a hell of an audience. I know that. I mean, we're up way past the 200 average on a download. So, and those are independent downloads. So that's, you know, over 200 different people listening to the show. I think that's just fantastic. You know, well, I haven't done the recent count, but, you know, well past 1,000 downloads. I mean, come on, guys, we're 30 shows into this thing. So, you know, it's been a fun experience for me. This is the second show that I've been able to produce, and I've enjoyed them both. This one, obviously, quite a bit different than the first one. This one suits me more because I get to talk to people who are just like me at different stages in making mead. Have been there, done that kind of thing. I appreciate Chris because he kind of gives me the he's able to help me understand the chemical side of things. He's a medical professional, and what he brings to the table in the chemistry end of it has helped me to understand some of the chemistry behind the mead making experience, you know, and, Jeff, you know, with the experiments that he does, especially the one where we found, Jeff, doing the nutrient, experiment, I thought was an amazing addition to this show, because that's something that, you know, we seem to be talking about quite often when we get involved in making these recipes. And, you know, so I've been able to learn from everybody. Aaron has had the single biggest impact, and it didn't come until late in our progress here. as far as my mead making goes. And that has taken me into a whole new direction. And of course, you know, I've talked about it before. It's that braggot that he sent. And that's the first taste of something that I thought, you know what, this is what I need to be doing. So let's fast forward to last week. Ricky, the mead maker, was on our show, and what a fun show it was. You know, the guy's a crack up, and if you've ever gone out there to his YouTube channel and watched his videos, I mean, it's just, some of them are just hilarious. You see this guy sitting out in the middle of this field, at this green pasture, in a chair with a glass of whatever, he just starts talking. It's like, okay, what is this anyway? Hilarious stuff, but he's also been very informative about this mead making process. It was his appearance last week that has taken me in a whole new direction with this mead making, because I think I have finally found the mead that I like to drink. Okay, and this is that lightly carbonated. You know, the meads that we were able to taste from Growing Film Meadery. I sent out an email with kind of a brief breakdown of some of the things that I liked from Growing Film. There was a couple I didn't particularly care for. The cherry I thought was the best of all. That tart cherry, or sour cherry, I guess it was called. That's the kind of mead I want to make right there. By now I'm sure you've tasted all of the meads from Groenfell. Did it impact your mead making at all? And if so, anybody?
I will say that I'm definitely eager to try Ricky's approach to things. It's going to be a matter of figuring out how to keep a sustained 86 degrees, with what I've got and what I can get my hands on easily here. But man, that, I've been thinking about moving in more of a lighter ABV, more of a draft style mead for a little while. The Saison and the hop mead that I was working on before, were both kind of nods in that direction, but they didn't quite get where I was hoping they would be. Hopefully with draft kit, or you know, the kegging kit, I should say, coming soon here, I have the ability to go in that direction a little bit easier as far as the carbonation side goes. But yeah, it's definitely something that I'm, yeah, the whole revelation of like fermenting hot and then using CO2 to get some of that just the funky stuff out after the fact really was a weird revelation that I'm still kind of processing myself. But yeah, no, it makes me want to get my hands dirty and try that, you know, in my own process, see how that works out.
I went out yesterday and picked up some D47 yeast. So I'm anxious to get started on a couple as well. Aaron, did you, any revelations for you? Anything that you're going to try or do differently or experiment with there?
Yeah, you know, so it's a style of mead that I definitely enjoy. You know, the lighter ABV session meads, you know, sparkling, definitely a good way to go. I've tried some other meads that are kind of similar along that style, and I think there's at least for my taste, there's definitely a place for that. To me, I think of that as being, you know, a hot summer day sitting outside in the sun and have something like that would be just a nice, light, refreshing type of a beverage. I'm not sure that, you know, for me, it's necessarily something that I would do regularly. I still, you know, think back to the meads that are more along my absolute favorite. And I think back to that mead I tried from Kurt Stock, the first one I ever tried. And it just knocked my socks off, you know, more of a higher ABV, more like a wine style type of mead. But you know, that has a place too. And that's not necessarily something that I would enjoy in that type of a setting of sitting outside on a hot summer day type of a thing. So it's definitely, this style is something I want to explore a little bit more. I'm actually pretty excited. I think finally this weekend I'm going to get around to bottling these 3 1-gallon batches of hopped mead that I've got here, which is definitely a step in that direction. So I'm excited to see how those turn out. But I just have to say, thinking back to last week's episode, I just felt like he was blowing my mind with some of the techniques that he uses, because it just seems like everything is kind of against what we've learned or accepted to be the right way or the proper right. way. But you can't argue with his results. I mean, the man makes a darn fine mead for sure.
Yeah. Throw it over to Ryan. Well, go ahead, Jeff, if you had something to add.
Oh, no, I was just agreeing with what Aaron was saying there.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, when I first started drinking meads, you know, there's beers that I could drink every day. There's wines that I could drink every day. But I hadn't found many meads that I'd drink every day. They were mostly occasion meads or occasional meads, something that you might not even necessarily want every day. And so the style of mead that I started making on a regular basis was this, you know, session strength, you know, bottle. I was doing mostly bottle carbonating, and I still do, but you know, the session strength, you know, carbonated mead. And you know, Ricky, I think I've told you guys, you know, a couple times now how just blown away I was with Valkyrie's choice, the traditional, yeah. Because that is hard to do. It is very difficult to make a traditional mead, a good traditional mead, you know, number one, and it only gets harder if you want to. And it only gets harder after that if you want to do a low alcohol one. For me, it's kind of like, hey, it's the style that I prefer because it's something that you can, you know, drink regularly. And it made me, you know, say, yes, you can achieve this kind of level of flavor and complexity, you know, within that category.
Yeah. I found that Valkyrie's Choice was probably number two underneath that cherry thing for me as well. I thought it was amazing how that wildflower honey aroma came out and just the whole flavor. It made me think, now this is the whole perception thing that is really kind of funky. Because when you get a good nose on that Valkyrie's Choice, and then you go to take a sip, it makes you think you're drinking something sweet. And, you know, but it wasn't sweet. It had a very nice flavor, very mild. I dig the wildflower aroma. God, I just keep my nose in the glass all the time. It just smelled good. It tasted good. It was refreshing. Love the character. Chris, you and I had talked on Sunday, and we were kind of discussing this whole did we lose Ryan again? We were talking about the fact that, you know, he's using D47. I mean, it's pretty much a workhorse type of a yeast. But then this 86 degree thing, you know, what did you get out of last week's show?
Well, you know, I think my words to you were, I'll believe it when I see it, therefore I'm going to try it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I believe some of my ancestors must have come from Missouri, because I'm sort of a show me kind of guy.
Now, all you people listening from Missouri.
Yeah. Did I mention I was born and raised in Missouri?
Yeah, well, you know what I'm talking about, Ben.
You and I have the same instinct, Chris.
you know what I'm talking about. But look, here's the thing. This whole conversation for me is sort of a on one hand, but on the other hand kind of thing. Sure. I'm a wine guy. I'm not a beer guy. And therefore, my style of mead is more wine-like. I'm more of a Ken Schramm, Kurt Stock, Michael Fairbrother, Sergio Metella style of mead maker. On the other hand, my wife absolutely loved everything from Grunfeld, and so did I. It was a whole different style, and therefore she demands that I make that style. So I'm going to. Yeah.
Happy wife, happy life.
That's exactly right. If mama ain't happy, nobody is.
That's why I'm going to keep perpetually making this chocolate coffee stout thing for my wife. So, God, we're all on the same page, aren't we?
Yeah, well, you know, the first rule of being a man is that you're going to spend your life doing things you don't want to do.
Yeah.
So, I learned that early on. So, I like the style. I like everything that he sent. My favorite of all of them was the ginger, the root of all evil. That was by far my favorite one. And that's what I'm going to make. It was my wife's favorite also. On one hand, it's difficult to make a good mead anyway, regardless of what style. It's even harder to make a dry one, just like Ryan said. It's harder to make a session and still retain any kind of honey character. So you got to hand it to him. He's pulling off some amazing feats to be able to do it on a regular basis, to be able to do it in 3 weeks. And, you know, when I see that kind of thing happening, I have to give it a try. Comes back to what I said when you asked what we got out of the show. I've been introduced to a lot of different styles and willing to try new styles that I never would have tried before. What is my staple? My staple is always going to be more wine-like because in my heart, that's what I like best. But there was absolutely nothing wrong with anything he sent. They were all good.
Yeah.
But you know, the beautiful thing about having a staple but trying new things is that it just expands your horizons a little bit and it gives you some perspective to help you reapproach the things that you're really interested in, like your staples, and see them with a fresh perspective too, I think. So that is another nice part about the show, is that we're all stretching very subtly out of our comfort zone and just finding new approaches to things.
Well,
absolutely.
It took me to a whole new level here, or at least a whole new perspective, I should say, with my mead making, because I have been searching. Okay, I mean, I've had a lot of mead over the course of the last few years. A lot of it sent to me. As you know, tastings, from the two shows that I've done, some of it that I've made here at the house, some of it that I bought. And having never been satisfied, and this is not a knock on the stuff that I've tasted, they're all perfectly good meat. Just not quite my liking. Maybe I've got a peculiar, flavor taste profile or whatever in the things that I like. I mean, typically I don't like sweet things. A lot of the meads that I've had have been very sweet. And they're the type of things where, you take a couple of sips out of the glass, put the glass down, and you're pretty much done. I didn't want that. I wanted something that wanted I wanted something that when I put the glass down, something that was going to make me pick it back up again and take a couple of more sips. And that's how I felt about this Groenfeld stuff. That's how I felt about Aaron's, that Braggot.
I think you just described my mead perfectly.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I make. It's a one glass and you're done. You don't want any more. It's, right. It's heavy. It's a mouthful to drink. It's, relatively sweet, but still balanced. Yeah. But it's a, you know, that's what I make. I make the kind of thing where you finish a meal, you get some dessert, you get a nice piece of hot, warm, moist chocolate cake. And one glass of my mead, and that's pretty much it.
Yeah.
Therefore, I bottle in 375. So that's the style of mead I make. But that's just that doesn't mean anyone's right or wrong. That's strictly a difference in personal taste and preference.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, I blasted out an email the other day after sitting here thinking about it, and I kind of, you know, looking back at the show last week, and I kind of ran through the different ones that he had sent, and the cherry, again, is probably my most favorite. It's just amazing how he's able to get, I mean, it felt like you were eating cherries right out of the can. I mean, you know, I mean, it wasn't sweet. It wasn't, it was just perfect. Everything about it was just perfect. And that's the kind of mead that I want to make. So, Jeff, I really apologize. I'm sure you saw it in my email, but I went through and I tossed everything I had, basically, in 1 gallon, all my, I had a number of 1 gallon deals going. I chucked them all. Because I knew that they weren't even going to be anywhere close to what I now want to do. This is the mead that I want to make. And so, I mean, it's almost like I'm starting over again. Okay. I've got this new road to go down. I'm very eager. I've got four packs of D47. I'm going to start four different meads eventually. I'd like to try that cherry thing, and I'd like to try, you know, something else, you know, a couple of different melomels and a traditional, and see what it takes to get to the level of the meads that I had from Groenfeld. So,
JD, before we get into to any other subject, while we're on the mentioning experimentation, I want to ask Ryan a question. This was actually something that he mentioned back right before he joined the show, and we never did expound on it at all. And it was in the middle of our coffee experiment, or right afterwards. Ryan mentioned something about the way to get the coffee flavor we were looking for was to not use coffee, but to actually use a black malt or a chocolate malt or something. Ryan, tell us about that. We never had a chance to talk about that on the show.
Yeah, so it's still it's in the bottle. I haven't sampled it in quite some time. If you give me a moment here, I can tell you exactly what I used. It was Simpson's coffee malt, is I believe what I was using at the time, which, you know, I got from Northern Brewer, and it just gives you the, and I cold steeped it, and it just gives you the aroma of, you know, just a great cup of coffee. And you know, it's what brewers often use if they're trying to stay pure with, you know, the malt and hops. if they're creating, you know, that that coffee, their coffee stouts or porters or what have yous. And it just has to do with the way that the roasters, I don't know if that's what they're called, but the guys roasting are roasting the malts. It's really funny. Barley is a very funny ingredient in that the way you treat it, you can bring out coffee notes, you can bring out chocolate notes, you can bring out caramel notes or honey notes or even kind of fruity notes. It's a unique little specimen there. But yeah, you know, in listening to a lot of the problems that people have had when they try to add adjuncts and create coffee beers or cordials or meads for that matter. You know, I said, well, I've never heard of anybody complaining that their coffee stout didn't turn out when they were using coffee malt. You know, and so that's where it kind of started. Chris, I owe you a tasting notes, and I got some Christmas parties coming up, and we'll crack open a few bottles, and I'll pass them around. But I'll tell you, it tasted, it smelled great, and then if you recall, I added hops to mine as well. So I'm looking for a little bit of a hoppy coffee, you know, flavor coming out of this thing.
Now, did you, I think you mentioned something about you steep this for a long time, like a week or two.
That was the honey malt. I steeped the coffee malt for 24 hours. I think it was 24, maybe 48 hours, but it was almost certainly 24. And that gave me all the color and the aroma. And it was, I have a jar, I've got almost a 2 gallon jar that, has an airtight lid on it. I actually got it from Northern Brewer as part of a kit. And when I opened it up, it's like you were drinking or opening up a cold brewed coffee. The honey malt, I cold steeped for 7 days. We're still calling that one a happy accident.
Okay. That's the discovery process. I mean, that's how you find out something new, right?
And you did that just to get extra honey flavor, is that right?
Yeah, the goal with that one was I wanted to make a relatively quick, you know, about a 1 month mead, and I wanted it to be session strength, but I wanted to see if I could get some honey flavor out of the malt. When I ferment completely dry, you know, you lose a lot of the honey flavor, and when you let it age, it returns, of course. So what I was trying to say was, can I ferment it dry but still retain a little bit of honey flavor? Now, I said this before I had ever heard of Ricky's, you know, 3-week process. I would say that my process of or what I was trying to do with using this honey malt, Canadian honey malt, it definitely gives it a little more complexity. I would say that it's not perfected by any means. I mean, what's perfected after one batch? But it does give you this really interesting complexity. It's got a little bit of maltiness. However, with that being said, you know, the vast majority of it was unfermentable sugars that were, you know, that were coming from it. So it's definitely interesting. And like Jeff always says, this is, you know, mead is something that we're constantly learning about. We're constantly, learning new ways to make it, new processes and what can be done. I mean, if you're making a beer, if you're making a wine, there's a formula. Now you can create different recipes within that formula, but that's kind of how you make beer. It's kind of how you make wine. And with mead, it's still the, it's like an Italian airport. There are no rules.
I've been there, done that. There are no rules. Interesting.
Well, I'm really interested in pursuing that coffee malt because, I don't tend to give up on something that easily. And I tried two versions of the coffee mead. The first, you know, JD and I did the same thing. That was a total flop. That went down the drain. The second one I did, just by brewing coffee. I mean, I brewed coffee just like I would drink and I used it to make mead. It was much better. Still not what I was looking for. So I just don't like to give up on something that easily. And, So I'm really interested in giving that a try. The only other thing that I can think of that I may want to try is to do the same thing that JD and I did, only this time just go all out. Just use the entire volume of water made into full-strength coffee. And maybe that'll get us where we're going.
I think the interesting part of that whole thing is I sit here thinking about, my wife loves these coffee stouts and coffee porters. And she'll pretty much, I mean, she's got her favorite brands out there. And I mean, including this one that I made for her. And it's interesting how the coffee really comes out nicely in the beer. But we just can't put it together quite yet in the mead. And I don't know, well, I mean, this may be part of that answer. This what Ryan's talking about, this coffee malt. So.
Yeah. And let's not forget what Patty Mackey suggested, which was to just do our steep in secondary, which is basically what you did with that coffee stout.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, that didn't come out, the coffee stout, but I did do a mead that way too, which is, I've got 2 gallons of it that I saved, and I get it bottled up and I'll get it out to you guys. That's the only one that I saved, and I did several coffee things, but I'm more interested in this coffee malt. I can see Chris's wheels turning already. I think it's going to go on my list of experiments too.
I can't let this thing go because if you guys had any idea how much coffee I drink in one day, I probably drink more coffee in one day than you guys drink in a week.
Yeah. He's part owner of Starbucks.
I might have to challenge you on that.
I would never own stock in Starbucks,
that's for sure. for personal reasons, that aside, I drink a lot of coffee, and I can't imagine not making a good coffee mead. That's just something that I've got to do.
Yeah.
And matter of fact, I'm about to go make a K-cup right now. The honey brown ale is gone.
Well, there's one other coffee experiment out there that I want to try, and it's only because I love Kahlua. And I even make my own homemade Kahlua. And this again goes back to Patty Mackey. She made a batch of coffee mead. She says tastes better than any Kahlua that she's ever had. And she made a traditional sweet mead. and then cold steeped basically the beans in the mead. And, you know, it came out with apparently a nice, robust flavor that you would typically find in a Kahlua, that real rich, deep, roasty coffee flavor that you get out of a Kahlua. So that's one that I still have yet to try yet. And so I haven't completely over, you know, I haven't completely thrown the whole coffee idea out the window yet either, but I do like this idea with the coffee malt. Moving into another category here a while back, guys, we all started these Braggot experiments. I want to quickly go around the table and find out where we're at with them. Let's go with, throw it over to Jeff. I think Jeff's already in the bottle, right? Didn't you already bottle yours up already?
Oh, yeah, it's already bottled. I tried bottle carbonating it, and the carbonation phase did not take. That was sad, but, you know, it is still one of the tastiest damn meads that I've made, ever, I think. So,
well, let's talk about the carbonating. I remember you talking about it before, but I don't know if we fully explored it. Why sure. Do you think it didn't carbonate?
Well, there are a lot of possibilities here. It could have been the alcohol content that was kind of throwing that off. It could have been, and I imagine a big part of it was the fact that I was trying to carbonate it with the yeast that was already in solution in a beer that was pretty much, sorry, a Braggot that was pretty much settled. So I'm not sure there was a lot of viable yeast to start with in solution to really get a carbonation going. It probably would have been better if I pitched a little bit of fresh yeast in with my priming sugar. That might have given me a little bit more result what I was looking for, as opposed to just, you know, the leaving whatever was left in a pretty clear product.
We're so careful to not pick up some of that sludge at the bottom of the carboy when we rack or bottle, right? So,
well, and I'll also say this. This surprised me as well. The Saison yeast that I used, I actually had, and this was one of my notes that I was kind of elated about when I racked it for the first time. I had a really minimal loss of space to the yeast cake. I mean, it compacted really nicely. I lost very little volume. I still had, I think I started with around 6.5 gallons of starter must, and I had well over 6 gallons when I racked to secondary. I mean, I had a little extra container that I just kind of poured out into a thing and enjoyed still, because it tasted really good even moving to secondary. The yeast was very efficient. It didn't eat up a lot of space in the fermenter either, for that matter.
Yeah.
So I think if I had, for one, used something other than the beer yeast that I was using as the carbonating yeast, maybe just threw in some, EC1118 or something like that, along with the priming sugar, I would have achieved a better result. It may have been the fact that I, for whatever reason, I wasn't expecting the yeast to be as efficient as it was. I had a target alcohol by volume of 9% on this one, and it came out like very nearly 11%. Just because it dried out the yeast. It dried out the honey I expected it to, and then took it well past, the one. I think the final gravity was something like 998, 996. Ridiculously low. So, I don't know. I also think if I try this again, I'm just going to try force carbonating instead and see where that goes.
Yeah. My two projects. Now, you know, keep in mind I did two of the bourbon barrel beer kits, bourbon barrel porters from Northern Brewer. One I added honey to. The other, I took 2 pounds of dry malt extract out, substituted that for 2 pounds of honey. They're both still on carboy because they're both, they both have oak, in them, and that obviously needs time to mature. Probably a couple more weeks at best. I was going to rack one of them today into a keg. I tasted it. Not quite what I'm expecting yet. And I think maybe a little bit of time is going to help on that. So, they both taste okay. I'm not jumping up and down yet about them, but I mean, they're kind of headed in the direction that I expected them to go, which is kind of a plus if you, you know, if you're me. So, so I'm pleased with the progress that they're making. And I'm actually kind of eager to start another, something maybe on the lighter side, using some lighter, some lighter extracts, you know, some lighter grain, that kind of thing. Maybe even some lighter honey, like a orange blossom or a clover. I mean, you know, of course, we're kind of limited on the types of clover we can get out here, but, it's clover that we get here in California is still, quite a bit lighter than a wildflower that we might get. So, Ryan, did you have a braggot going as well?
Yeah.
Where are you at with it?
Mele Kalikimaka. Which, is of course Hawaiian for Merry Christmas, because it was a stout, with, coconut and, caramelized honey. You know, and the thing with mine, it's not quite where I want it to be either. And the main thing that I think of is that I've had a few, Bouchers in my, mead sampling career, and they typically take a while to come around. I mean, I've heard people say, you know, some of the best ones are 5 years old. Yeah, I'm not going to wait that long. I don't think it's going to take that long, but I think that this one, it does need a little bit of time to let that caramelized honey, work. It's the only honey I used was caramelized honey. I didn't do a mix of, you know, some caramelized, some uncaramelized, that kind of thing. You know, so maybe next Christmas. I mean, maybe it won't even take that long, but I think it needs a little while yet. This is, of course, before had I known that I could have, I can get a mead in, you know, 12 hours if I ferment it at 115 degrees, like, Ricky suggests.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go. Aaron, did you, what do you got?
Yeah, so I had, at this point, have just put together the recipe for mine. It's a black IPA style. Still just some things going on here that are preventing me from making a bunch of mead and beer and stuff at this point, but that's definitely at the top of my list when I get back to it.
Yeah, cool. And Chris, what's going on with yours?
Well, you know, I've got the Irish Red Ale,
right,
braggot, and this was an idea from Ken Schramm, and I like Ken's meads, and though, you know, if you've been listening for very long, you know, I replicated or tried to replicate his Heart of Darkness, and so someone along the line said we should call it the Heart Murmur. So then when this braggot came along, and I decided to do it again, I did it several years ago. And, so when I decided to do it this time, I said, you know, I need to talk to Ken about this and sort of ask him where was he going with this? What was he trying to achieve? So I talked to Ken a while back about it, and he gave me some pointers on how it was, you know, why the IBUs were so high on it. The IBUs on it are like 65, so it's almost along the lines of a double IPA. But it's got an Irish red ale at its base. And so I asked him, I said, well, what's this thing come out like? What's the final verdict on it? And he said, I'm not going to tell you. He said, I'm going to let you wait and taste it yourself. And I said, oh, come on, tell me how it turned out. He goes, not going to say a word about it. You figure it out and you let me know what you think. So since he wouldn't tell me anything, he was completely silent on the subject, I decided to call it Silence of the Shram.
you got to send him a bottle.
Yeah.
That's good.
So from now on, it's going to be the Silence of the Shram, Braggot. And, it's in secondary now, and it's got a ways to go. It's going to have to settle down quite a bit, which is something we talked about in the beginning of this project, that the few braggots that I have made, which is only two other than this one, have required quite a bit more aging than anything else I've made.
Yeah.
So it's going to be sitting a while. It's still extremely bitter and not smooth at all. So, I mean, I can see that it's there. It's just going to have to calm down a little. Of course, it's going to be bitter forever with 65 IBUs. But it's going to balance with the sweetness once some of the sweetness starts to come back in it.
Yeah. I want to wrap the show tonight, guys. Chris and I have ventured off onto another project, and I know we've talked about it on a couple of shows, and this is that graph. This is that apple cider, apple juice, and beer, where you steep some grains, you add some hops, you go through the whole boil process, and then you chuck all that into a hopper full of apple juice. And so Chris and I have pretty much done an identical recipe. It's the Brandon O's that's found on the Homebrew Talk. We've included it on our website. It's called Graph. I just kind of wanted to, now this, just, I started mine, I believe it was on the 30th of November. So it's been going. I think Chris started his little before me, but, I'm eager to really try this stuff. Interesting recipe. Everything that I've read about it from all, you know, there's over 350 some odd pages of related to this graph on homebrewtalk.com, and I'm about almost through all, you know, all of the pages. I'm on like, you know, 148 now, the ones that talk about that are related specifically to the original recipe have all said that it tastes amazing. Today, Chris, I checked my gravity today. I was getting a little bit concerned because, I started this thing, on the 30th. I didn't get any activity until the 1st. We started out at 1064, if you recall. And, on the 4th, it was still at 1040. And I thought, well, usually Nottingham is a little better performer than that. Usually Nottingham will hum right through. But today I checked and we're making progress because it's all the way down to about 118 now, 018. So, mm-hmm. I'm going to give it another, probably another 3-4 days, see if it bottoms out. and then put it in a carboy. Is that what you did?
Yeah, I went through, I think mine ended up at 10-12. And then I went straight from primary into the bottle. I just racked it into a bottling bucket with my priming sugar and bottled it. I will say this, though. I've got one batch in bottles. I've got one batch in secondary, and I've got a third batch that's about to go in as soon as my get a bucket open. and I'm going to say this. There's two things you need to know if you decide to make this. First of all, the results change almost daily. Once you get this thing in out of primary, the taste changes drastically every time you taste it. So time is extremely important with this. It's going to take 3 or 4 or 5 weeks for this thing to finally get to a point where you can make a final judgment on it. The second, and I think this is the most important thing you need to know, the results of this are going to depend entirely on your expectations. Some people make this and they're beer brewers and they're expecting an apple ale beer. Some people make it and they're expecting a cider. So your expectations and what you consider a good cider is everything with this recipe. And don't underestimate the difference between the Crystal 60 and the Crystal 120. There's a huge difference there. Don't underestimate the importance of a little tannin in there, which is why I added 4 black tea bags on the second batch. And don't underestimate the importance of the added ascorbic acid in the apple juice that you purchase at the store. All of these things come into play, and they make drastic differences. So, consider what you think is a good cider. What do you want? First of all, you're not making a beer. You're making a cider. This is in and of itself, in every way, a cider, not a beer. The beer components, the beer components, the grain that's included and the hops, those are meant to augment the young nature of a cider. So you are making a cider. But decide what kind of cider you like and then let that decision guide you as to the ingredients you choose. If you like a dry, crisp, slightly acidic cider, go with the Crystal 60 and don't be afraid of the apple juice that has ascorbic acid added. Also consider adding in some black tea bags in the steep. If you like a sweeter cider, go with the 120L Crystal malt. And maybe consider finding some apple juice that doesn't have the ascorbic acid. Those things seem trivial, but they make a huge difference in the final product.
I went with the 120. I ordered the 120L, thinking that I mean virtually every freaking thing of apple juice I've seen on the shelves and in the stores that I shop at, every single one of them have, vitamin C, ascorbic acid in them. So, I thought, okay, I'm not even going to fool with it. I'm just going to get the 120. Well, lo and behold, I managed to find the exact same apple juice that Chris is using. So mine is going to have that sweeter component to it because it's pure, unadulterated, apple juice. I have no idea what the apples are that are in it, but I took a sip of the juice itself before when I was dumping it into the fermenter, and it's good stuff. I like it. So you know, so
yeah, the 120 from what I've tasted so far tends to give sort of a caramel note to the cider,
which might be okay. That actually might taste pretty good. I mean, caramel and apples go together anyway, right?
Oh yeah, it's absolutely. I mean, the taste is absolutely great. It's not that. It's not what I was shooting for, because you know that you and I both, we like the Magners, which is a fairly dry, very crisp, dry. Whereas this, with the caramel and the little bit of sweetness, is a little more, I don't know, a little warmer flavor, I guess you might say. It's more the kind of thing that you might imagine sitting by the fireplace and drinking. Whereas a drier, crisper cider would be something like a summertime drink. So neither one of them are bad in any way. They're just different. And you can choose your ingredients there, to suit your taste in cider, if you like cider.
Yeah. And I put the link, in the recipe, in the post that I put on the webpage. I did put the link to the homebrewtalk.com page, that highlights Brandon O's, and we made every attempt to contact Brandon O, with no result. I just, I gave up after a couple of days, but did, credit the recipe to his name. There, if you go to that link and read, and like I said, there's 300 and some odd pages related to this one recipe. Don't be fooled by 98% or even 99% of the comments made in there, because this kind of goes back to Chris's soapbox that day he stood up and offered up a sermon. Because people make comments in there about, I did the exact same recipe, but, you know, I changed this, I changed that, whatever. But there is enough comments in there, if you're able to kind of weed out, you know, the mishmash, there is enough comments in there to at least tell you where you should wind up with your ABV, with your gravity. That was of interest to me. I kind of wanted to know that. I kind of wanted to know what people thought about it. There's some mixed reactions from different people, and Chris is right on the money when he talks about, you know, there are beer brewers and there are cider makers that are brewing this up. And if you're a beer brewer and you approach this thing as if it was a beer, because you go through this whole boil, you know, steep the grain, boil, add the hops, thing, and pour it in the fermenter, you might be surprised. You might not.
You'll be disappointed.
Yeah. Because this is not a beer. This is definitely a cider. And Chris, I got that from, you know, the majority of what I'll call legitimate reactions that people had in the forum, in that forum. That's what I got from most of them, that it was, you know, a damn good cider, an unusual but good cider. So Aaron and Ryan, Jeff, I would encourage you guys to jump on this and give it a shot.
I have been thinking about it, and Chris, I do appreciate the input there on the 60 versus the 120 and using ascorbic acid or not. I think that's going to help me kind of make some directions on the way I want to go with it.
Here's the Chris, you're going to have to help me out with the name, old friend. I can't remember the name of the damn apple juice.
It's Simply Apple.
Simply Apple. Okay. And this is Walmart. Yeah, it's a Walmart brand. It's a national brand, okay? And you should be able to find it.
But you will not find it on the shelf. You won't find it on the shelf. It'll be in the cooler section in the back, where the cold orange juice is kept. They have Simply Orange and Simply Apple and Simply, They got several different juices, but those, the ones that are simply apple, or all those, that line of juices, they have nothing added whatsoever. No ascorbic acid, no nothing. Which depend, like I said, depending on what you want, may be a good thing or it may not. I'm pretty much under the impression that if you're using the 120L, you probably need the ascorbic acid to help balance it out, you know, a little bit. But if you're after a really heavy, sweet, caramelly something, you might want to use the 120L and skip the ascorbic acid. So, like I said, you're going to have to tailor it to what you're after. To me, this first one that I made with the 120L and no ascorbic acid, to me, it just screams to be warmed up with a little cinnamon stick. That's what it reminds me of. Whereas what I'm really after is something a little lighter and more crisp. So I think what I'm going to end up going after is using 60L. I'm going to use the Simply Apple with no ascorbic acid and the four black tea bags included in the steep with the grains. And I think that's pretty much going to do it for me. That's really all it needs.
Yeah. That's what I did. Talking to Chris on Sunday before I had started my batch, I had made the decision to go ahead and take his advice. So my recipe is like his second recipe. Other than that, everything is exactly the same. So,
go ahead. The batch you have in there, JD, I think you're going to find the only thing that you're going to want to change is you're going to want to step down to the 60L crystal.
Well, yeah. I mean, I wasn't counting on being able to find an apple juice without ascorbic acid in it at a reasonable price. I mean, there is an organic, all-natural, pure apple juice that I could get at, like, a Whole Foods market, but it's, like, $8 a gallon, and I just didn't feel like, you know, just the first time out, really didn't want to spend that kind of money on something that might not work out. But I did manage to find. Now, I did also find the Simply Apple at our local grocery store the other day when we went grocery shopping. And they had a whole shelf full of it in the cooler with all the juices. So it is a Walmart nationwide brand. I did ask the guy there at the Walmart that I got ours from. So if you've got a Walmart in your town, guys, they should carry it in the refrigerated section. So
I've got roughly $35 in a 5-gallon bag. That's grains and everything.
Yeah.
That's about as cheap of a 5-gallon, you know, the kind of stuff you can just slam glass after glass.
Yeah, that's what I like.
You just can't beat that. You can't beat that hardly at all.
That is a fantastic price, actually. You know, I hear time and time again, oh yeah, I got into homebrew and trying to save money, and it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably not going to happen. Yeah, right. All right, guys. Well, hey, the music has started. That means we need to bring this thing to a close. Another outstanding discussion here on a Tuesday night. What do you say we all come back next Tuesday night? We'll do it again. I think we've got a few more shows before we call it quits for the holidays. And we'll see if we can't get some kind of a calendar out there for folks to stare at along the way. But cool show. Again, thanks to Ricky the Mead Maker last week, all the mead that he sent out to everybody. I guess with that, we'll see everybody next week, 9 o'clock right here at the Mead House, themeadhouse.com.